audiblepodcast.com for supporting Book Hype. For a free 30-day trial, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hey everyone, I'm Jen, and I'm joined today by Brittany and Kristen. Hello, ladies.
Good. Hello.
Or afternoon, if you're listening to this in the afternoon.
Yeah, for us, it's late morning today, finally. We can all function a little bit better now that we've had coffee and got to sleep in a little bit. Today is going to be our book review episode for The Shadow Queen by CJ Redwine. And it's a pretty cool read, so we'll get to that in a minute. First, of course, let's talk about what we've been reading. So, Brittany, have you been reading anything exciting this week?
Yeah, not so much for pleasure, but at work I had to do a really cool task of turning some plays into screenplays. So like taking out all the play language and stuff like that. So I got to read a couple of Peter Barnes plays, who I've never read anything by until this week. So that was kind of cool. And I read Heaven's Blessings, Dreaming, and Jubilee, and they were all really interesting. I don't know that I'm necessarily a fan of his plays, but it was just kind of cool to read them in a different way and look for ways to stage it for film rather than reading them as strict like plays. Like you can, it's cooler to like imagine a world much bigger than what a stage can give you and try to make the play fit that. So that's what I've been reading all week. That's kind of taken up most of my time this week.
That's really cool and very, very different. So your job is cool. We get it.
Awesome. Sorry. It's been cool. No,
All right. How about you, Kristen?
I read Dare Me by Rebecca Shea. I believe it comes out next week, it starts out incredibly dark. Like there's some very intense things that happened right at the beginning of the book, but as it went on, it became really, really sweet, and I really liked it. So if you're into a slightly darker romance, something a little just dark. Anyway, it's really good, though. I really did enjoy it by the end. And then I read yesterday, I spent the entire day reading Nowhere But Here by Katie McGarry so that I could read Walk the Edge, the second book in that series. Oh my God, guys, I'm obsessed with this book. Like Nowhere But Here was so, so, so good. And I loved it. And I was like gushing to Karen, who read this book probably 3 or 4 months ago and was like, I don't remember everything. So I'd like start talking about something and she'd be like, not sure what you're talking about. So I'd start like describing it in detail and like, Karen, and she's like, you read it today. I read it like 3 months ago. Give me a break. So, but it's a really, really great book. It's, you know, it takes place in the whole motorcycle club culture, and it's about this girl who was, you know, the daughter of a woman who did not necessarily want to be a part of the culture, and her father is very much like completely ingrained in it. So her mother kind of ran away with her as a kid and got remarried, and then Emily, the main character, she has to return for one reason or another to the club family, and like she gets a good taste of what's going on, and you learn a lot about the people in the club, and maybe they're not exactly what she thought they would be. And it's a really, really sweet, really great story, and there's a major twist like right at the end that shocked me and made it a really, really, really great read. So if you're looking for something a little fun, a little dangerous, check out Nowhere But Here. It's really good.
Have you ever read any of Katie McGarry's other books?
No. This is my first.
Oh, Kristen.
I'll start working on that. I've already been told I have to read Ready Player One for hype. They've been throwing things on my to-read pile, which is driving me crazy. She'll go on my list because I loved this book, so I can't even.
Yeah,
admit.
The very first book she ever wrote, it's Echo and Noah are in the story, and it is by far my favorite of her books.
Interesting.
It's so good. It's Pushing the Limits, is what it's called.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'll be Karen, checking.
I think
out the
Karen
rest
has
of
a. Yeah, I think Karen has a copy. And the cool part about this series is that Katie McGarry actually, like, went and visited with bikers. Like she went to a biker, like a mob, and like they let her into her world. So her writing about this world is incredibly authentic because she was allowed in. So, like, it was really cool to hear her story about how she got involved with this and the thing, you know what I mean? So it's super cool.
Well, and it reads that way. Like, things that you always assume are, you know, just understood are completely ridiculous. And it definitely reads like an insider. So that's so cool. So cool.
Yeah, she does her research. She's pretty intense about it. She's really awesome. So I'm glad you liked her book a lot. All right. So for me, Kristen has set me up again. I read the Oxford series by Lauren Lane. I think I read them literally within a day of each other. There's only two in the series at the moment. There's a third coming, and I need to get my hands on that third book because it is probably about the most interesting of the characters. Not that the others weren't, but yeah. So I read that, and then I read Glittering Court by Rochelle Mead. This is her newest series that she's coming out with. It's different and yet similar to, like, the Vampire Academy series. There's still the elements of court and royal and that kind of thing. Clearly not about vampires. But it's really cool. And I love it when Michelle Reed writes in that kind of way that sets up the court intrigue and the mysteries and stuff. She's really good at that. So this is a really great way to kick off her latest series. So that comes out, I believe, on Tuesday. So definitely check that out.
Guys, I took this responsibility way too seriously, and it kept me up at night. I decided on that it will be Paper Princess by Erin Watt. We have all read at least one of Elle Kennedy's books now, so this will give you a taste of some Elle Kennedy mixed with some Jen Frederick, who is also kind of exists in that sports romance. But they kind of joined forces to write this story about this girl who kind of gets sucked into this crazy new life living with this family that has five sons, and it's they're called the Royals. And it's a really good, fun book. It has a bit of a couple of twists in there, things you don't expect. So I hope everybody likes it. But yes, Paper Princess by Erin Watt, and it comes out April 4th.
All right, then. And you did a reveal or something for that, didn't you?
Yes, I did the cover reveal, and I will be writing my review this week so that it goes up. But yes, it's really, really good, guys. I really liked it.
Awesome. And also to look forward to in April, just so you guys have a heads up, we are going to have a guest author on. We're going to have Brittany Cavallaro, who wrote A Study in Charlotte. And now I've been listening to A Study in Charlotte in my car as I'm driving around, because for my new job, I go to, like, different places throughout the day, so I have lots of time to listen. I have lots of commuting time. And can I just tell you how much I love the guy who's reading A Study in Charlotte? He does it with accents, and he does all these different characters, and it is just so, so good. So if you guys want to listen to A Study in Charlotte before we talk to Brittany in late April, of course, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. You could always pick it up with that free 30-day trial. You can just go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. So I would definitely suggest checking that out, because I am in love. A, it's an amazing Sherlock Holmes book. A. B, the guy who's reading it to you is lovely. So just giving it the twofold right there. It's kind of really nice, you guys.
I'm a little worried about having Brittany on, just because I just want to talk about Sherlock Holmes so much all the time. And if I have her ear,
it's going to be your wish fulfillment. Are you kidding me? It's going to be amazing. It's going to be
so
all
excited.
Sherlock all the time, that episode. So many things to discuss. I love it.
I'm so excited.
We're also going to have to come up with nicknames for the two of you. Otherwise, it's going to get very confusing.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get on with our review of The Shadow Queen by CJ Redwine. So, Kristen, for you, is this a buy or a borrow?
I'm going to say borrow, just because while it was a really fun read and I really did like it, especially by the end, I don't know for me if it has a ton of reread value. So for me, a buy is something I have to have because I want to read it over and over again. So for me, I'm going to say borrow.
Okay. How about you, Brittany?
It's a definite borrow. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. There was a lot that was interesting, a lot that felt far too familiar and worn out, I think just because of what I like to read and watch, which we'll get into in a little bit. But yeah, definitely a borrow. I know that there are more books coming out, but they're kind of standalone in a trilogy, I think that's how it was described. So I don't think I would need to go back and reread this in order to read the next couple that are coming out. So definitely a borrow.
Okay. I'm going to say bye. And the reason being, I really enjoyed this book. And I think it's really different when it comes to that whole fairy tale retelling, reimagining kind of thing. It had a lot of components that I really enjoyed that I felt were different. I know where you're coming from, Brittany, because you watch Once Upon a Time, and I could see some parallels that existed there. But I think, in general, I really liked it. I liked some of the elements that she had that were kind of just little twists on things that are always consistently in, like, a Snow White reimagining. So we can talk about that in a few minutes, but I say bye. And I think the standalone is they're going to visit all the different places. Like, clearly within this story, there are different things that they mention. They mention the Fae that is, you know, a rogue fae somewhere in a different land. And then they mentioned whoever, you know, is running the dark magic and let the ogres out in the first place kind of thing. So I think those were kind of little hints as to where the other books might go. So we'll have to wait and see, but it'll be interesting. All right. So essentially this is a reimagining of Snow White. So how did you guys feel about the story, this story in relation to the fairy tale Snow White?
I thought it was different enough to the point where, like, I mean, I've never seen Snow White and the Huntsman except for the last 15 minutes of it because FX plays it a lot, so it comes on before American Horror Story a lot.
Yeah, that's not a great film to compare to, but...
Yeah, well, luckily, like I said, I've only seen 15 minutes of it, so I have no knowledge of what goes on there. But I think... as an adaptation, it's really interesting because I haven't, aside from whatever Once Upon a Time does with Snow White, I don't know of any other Snow White adaptation. So, because I'm just not, Snow White was never my favorite princess. So going into her mythology was never something that I cared to do. So that was, it was interesting enough. Like, but it's still also with my very limited exposure to Snow White felt too familiar.
Okay, so how did you think it felt familiar? There were parts of it.
Just knowing that there's this queen who killed to get into power and then outcasted Lorelai. I was going to say Snow, yeah. Like I'm talking about Once Upon a Time. Because I guess maybe that's where it is. It's like... you have someone controlling someone else's heart in order to kill someone else. And then you have her trying save her people and then trying to win over the guy who's under the control of the queen to come back in. And she's working with this little band of followers to save time in order to build up her strength to go back after the queen. So she's kind of living in hiding, but also pulling off these little missions in order to make sure her people don't starve, but she's not strong enough. It's just trying to reinforce that confidence and also gain enough power to go back after this person. I don't know. It felt like almost like a checklist of things that I've seen before that I'm like, oh, I've seen this. Oh, I've seen that. Oh, I've seen that. But not necessarily one in one particular story. I don't know if that's making sense.
No, I mean, I kind of get it. The heart thing was really hard for me because of everything we see on Once Upon a Time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that part, I was like, oh, hearts. Why do we have to have
but
hearts?
But I did enjoy the fact that he had...
two hearts.
Called two hearts because I loved that dragon thing, which I wanted to talk about when we get there. But that was one of the big things that I really liked about this story.
Yeah. I liked that there were different elements to it like that. That was the parts... those were the parts that I really enjoyed and made it... a story that I wanted to read more of. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was enough of that kept me kind of fresh rather than all the stuff that we've seen a lot of. So I guess it was a different balance for me. So basically within this world of Snow White or whatever we want to call her, Lorelai, and I was like, oh wait, is this a lost Gilmore? What's going on?
I know. I think that name also threw me off too.
Yeah.
Reigning Lorelai.
So within this world, there are different realms, like with many fairy tale stories. But in this one, there are also different people. So they talk about the Fae. There's the Draconi, who are of Elder, and they actually turn into dragons. They shapeshift. And a part of our storyline interacts with those, the elders. And then there's the Mardushku, I think I'm saying that right, and that is what Lorelai and her aunt Irina are. They're from Mordekaiser, and they're, so Ravenspire is the place where Lorelai was born with her father and her mother, who was from Mordekaiser, who was a Mardushku. And so they were living happily, and then Irina is just basically a jealous, raving loon at this point. So when Tatiana, who is Lorelai's mom, goes back for her father's funeral, her father, which Irina killed, Irina then kills Tatiana. And so from there, the story evolves where Irina then goes back to Ravenspire and gets the king to marry her and puts everyone in the realm under her control, except for Lorelai, because she realizes Lorelai has magic. And she feels that if she can win Lorelai over, then they can work together and they can rule the kingdom together. But Lorelai, all of 8 or 9 years old, realizes just how bad it's getting. And she goes up and grabs her aunt's arm and forces the magic to stop. And everyone wakes up. And that's when Irina realizes she's A, in a little bit of trouble, and B, she lashes out and ends up killing Arlen, who is Lorelai's father. And then from there, she also at the time thinks that she kills the children, Leo and Lorelai. She doesn't realize that they're still alive until much later when Lorelai starts to attack and use her magic more. So it's a little bit different, not terribly different. But I loved the story of the Elder and the Draconi. Because in the beginning, you get two different stories, one about Lorelai and one about Cole. And I'm not even going to try to say his entire name because it has way too many syllables that I cannot pronounce correctly.
Thank goodness there's an abbreviation here.
Yep, yeah. I was very grateful. So Cole is what we're going with. And he is kind of this carefree prince. When we first see Cole, he is having a party because he got expelled yet again from Cadet Academy. And he and his friends are kind of hanging out and doing their thing. And then he's just waiting for his parents to return from the Ogre Wars front kind of thing. And then, so he's expecting them to come back and he's going to get in trouble. And when the page comes to get him, he's brought upstairs to meet Master Elier, I think is how you say his name. And it's not to see his parents. It's because his parents and his older brother have all been killed at the battlefront. And that leaves Cole the king. And Cole is not ready to be king. And so from there, he and his friends, Trug and... Is it Jin, do you think, or Jen?
Yeah. I said Jin.
I said Jin.
That's what I thought. Because I wasn't sure. I was like, so he and his friends, Trug and Jin, shift forms and they go flying out to the front lines to see this ogre issue. And when they get there, Cole realizes something very devastating, that they're not just regular ogres, that the ogres have been infused with power and something is wrong because they have magic and the dragons can't fight the magic, even in their dragon forms. So Cole devises this plan that he'll go get magic of his own and that he'll have to go to Ravenspire to see Queen Irina and make a deal with her. And he thinks that it's totally fine because Ravenspire's people are starving and because the land is dying and drying up, and that if he offers them jewels to be able to buy food to keep her people happy, that she'll just help him with the magic. Silly, naive boy. So the story kind of evolves from there. And there were some really cool things that happened within the story. Like we said, Cole it can shift into a dragon. So Cole has two hearts within him. He has his human heart and his dragon heart. And as you can imagine, the dragon heart is fierce. It wants to hunt, kill, prey. That's all it thinks about. But his human heart is what keeps him kind of sane and kind of not the kind of thing that would just kill. But that comes into play later when he maybe possibly loses his human heart. But some of the interesting things, you know, that happen within this, we have the dragon aspect, which is really cool. We have Irina, who is really a truly awful queen. And her magic is sucking the land dry. But it's also killing her, which I thought was kind of interesting because she doesn't rightfully belong to Ravenspire, and she's taken it on her own, and she's made it much, much worse. So the land and the things around her that she's trying to manipulate fight her. And so when she can't rule the heart of the land or the things around her, and they have to succumb to her magic, it weakens her own heart. I thought that was kind of an interesting twist on the cost of magic, because we, with all the different things we've read and we watch, you guys, I think we all know that there's, you know, there's a price. Magic has a price, as Rumpelstiltskin would say. Ugh. And I know, I'm sorry. But you guys know what I mean. So what did you think about those kinds of elements? Because I thought they were, I thought they were really cool. I especially like the dragons. I'm a big fan of the dragon aspect. But what did you think of that, those portions of the story?
Yeah, the Draconi and the style of magic and like how magic works were my two favorite parts of this book. I mean, the dragon thing is just cool. He's human and a dragon. Like, he can be both. And I love the twist that that brings in with the whole huntsman thing. Like, it totally worked for me. And the magic, just the idea that the reason that Lorelei is stronger than Irina is because she doesn't have to force the like nature's elements to work with her. She shows them her heart and shows them, you know, what she wants to do, and because of that she doesn't have to waste time trying to convince them. Like, it's just the magic flows through her and works. Like, that was so cool. And I like, it sometimes takes a while for the hero to like build up enough magic or find a way to overpower the evil foe or whatever, whereas Lorelei basically had it in her the whole time. She just had to like find the confidence that she could beat Irina, and as soon as she knew that she could do, you know, she could fight her off, then it was like no holds barred, here comes Lorelei. And that worked for me. I really, really liked how they set up the magic in this.
Yeah, definitely the magic, especially how it worked against Irina, I really liked, because that's not something that we see a lot. Yes, magic like has a cost usually, but it for some reason, like, I kept thinking of, unfortunately, I'm sorry for anyone on this who's listened to this who doesn't watch Once Upon a Time, but we all watch it and we have a podcast about it. So, like how Rumpelstiltskin or the Dark Ones slowly like turn when they're using magic and getting darker. I liked how Irina, like, it was not due to the fact that she was using magic against the people, but like just that she didn't belong, and that was a big thing against her. I really wanted more of Irina's story, because Lorelei to me felt too, like, I kind of knew that she would, like, you know, eventually, like, figure out what she needed to get her magic to work, and it would be, here comes Lorelei, which is fine. But I wanted more of Irina's story for some reason. I thought that she was just a really interesting character, and I think it's maybe because I'm drawn to darker characters recently. I don't know what the switch is in me, but I love like bad characters. It could be because I'm watching Buffy. It could be because I'm just tired of hero stories. I don't know what it is. I'm just really drawn to dark characters. And so reading this, I was like, yes, I want all Irina. Like, I just want to stay in her world of the story. And I really, really want like a companion novel of just Irina and Victor. I think that would just make me like this series so much more.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. And it surprised me. I was like, you know,
yeah.
I kind of found myself like skimming ahead before going back and reading, being like, okay, when does Irina come back? Do we get a whole section that's just her? Like, when are we going back? I don't know why. I think that her part of the story and that type of magic that Kristen was talking about was what, and the dragons, I really like the dragon thing, is what kept me in the story. Whereas with Lorelei, I was like, okay. Like, I just wanted to know more about the mythology and the world as opposed to her story. But that's what made me like it and not hate it, which is a good thing.
Yeah, very good thing. All right, so let's talk a little bit about characters. As you said, we talked about Irina a little bit. She's a little on the crazy side and very dark. She is trying to heal her own heart, so she uses the people in her dungeon to try and steal their youth, basically, what's left of their lives. So she is able to remove hearts, and then she tries to use them to save her own, and it never works. The hearts reject her just like the land does. So that's really an interesting facet. And then she has this person that's with her. His name is Victor, and he comes from Mordekaiser. And he's basically in love with her. He allows her to do these horrible things. He doesn't, you know, ever really chastise her. He cares for her and worries about her. Because the thing with Irina is once she uses her magic, if she's fighting the land or whatever it is, if it's not succumbing to her will, then the magic makes her incredibly weak. And it throws her heartbeat off, and she is, like, passed out for days at a time. But what she discovers is that she could... The only kinds of hearts that she's not tried yet are one from Elder and one from her own home, Mordekaiser. And so she has a heart from Elder because as the story progresses, Cole does go and make a deal with Irina. And initially the deal is that he will bring the girl who he doesn't know is Lorelei to the queen. And that, you know, then the queen will get rid of the ogres for him in the land. And so when they go to make a blood oath, one should always be careful when making a blood oath. Irina changes the wording to that Cole will do the task that she commands of him. And so once the blood oath is made, Irina tells him that the task is that he must bring Lorelai's heart to her so that he has to kill Lorelei, which is not what Cole is about. He sees no, it's not what he does. And so he's now stuck because if he does not keep the oath, he dies. So what did you guys think about Irina's like sneakiness in making the deal so that Cole had to kill Lorelei?
I mean, it basically, I wasn't surprised. We knew that something was up, and Irina's not just going to make a straight up deal. It just didn't surprise me at all. And then later on, as the deal kind of shifts and changes, like that was the more interesting part for me. Like, as she made him like almost like a slave to the deal, like he has to do it or it's going to destroy him. Like that became right. The more interesting part of it.
That's true. I really did like that was the more intense, interesting part of it because he wasn't totally in control. So when Cole first goes to find Lorelei, he is very much in control. He has both his human and his dragon heart, and his human heart rules over both. And Cole unknowingly has already met Lorelei. She saved him and his friends from a group of starving people in the town. And in the town that they first entered, because Cole didn't realize how bad off the people were.
Fairy tale meet cute.
Yeah, it was pretty good. She's saving his butt in the middle of the starving people grabbing at him and his friends. It was pretty impressive. And then, so he says he's loyal to her and that he owes her a great debt because they saved their lives. And then he has to go and realizes it's her he's supposed to kill. And he's like, oh, wait a minute, this is not going to work. But his friends are also adamant that he cannot die because he needs to be, there for his kingdom, and his kingdom needs him. So they're all kind of caught. And Lorelei decides that they can pull a fast one, that they can somehow use a different heart and pretend that it's hers. And it almost works, except it doesn't. So when Cole goes and brings back the heart, the queen then does something terrible. She puts a briar and bone or a thorn and bone necklace about his neck that entraps him, and she takes his human heart. So then Cole is reduced to just being a dragon, but he can only be in human form. So Cole then becomes this thing that just wants to kill Lorelei. So the story kind of goes from there, and Cole's a really cool character because he's honorable in a lot of ways, and he struggles to not want to kill, and he fights himself, and he fights Irina, and there's just a lot of things going on for Cole. So what did you guys think about Cole and his struggle with all of that magic and all the things that happened with him?
I thought it was really interesting to see how, like, the hearts worked within each other. Like, yes, he has this, like, power to be a dragon, but what happens when he's just left a dragon in human form and he has to figure out how to, like, still hold on to the human part of himself, and he's fighting himself, and it's a literal internal struggle because it's like part of his biology, I guess. But it's also playing with his head, and I think that even with Lorelai's story, the fact that these people are trying to save one singular person but also have to put the needs of their kingdom, it's like this dual battle that's going on between them. So he's fighting between this dragon and himself, and then also fighting between saving this one person and holding up an honor there and saving his kingdom, and then he's tied to Irina. So there's just so much internal and external struggles going on that I thought that made an interesting, like, you have to kind of like follow all of these intertwining journeys that these people are taking. I think that they played the story played that well. Do you know what I mean?
No, I absolutely do. And I think it was really interesting in regards to the fact that they did have, it wasn't just about themselves. It wasn't just about their kingdoms. There were lots of different, you know, like, moving parts to the story, mm-hmm. which I thought made it interesting. Kristen, what did you think?
Yeah, the whole Dragonheart thing. At first, I thought Irina was going to be able to, like, use his Dragonheart to give her extra power or something. Like, originally, that's where my brain went. So when it came down to her taking his human heart and making him, like, a dragon stuck in human form, that was, like, the... I don't even know. I really liked that part of it. It was original. It was something I had never even thought about. And then to find out later on that even in his human form, like, he can feel and use Dragonfire, like, that was really cool. So that part of it was so original and so new for me that I really, really liked that part of the story. Not to mention the whole, like, collar thing and that, like, it kept his people away. So that... You know, he didn't have Trug and Jin to be near him to help him keep a hold of his humanity and, you know, all of that. Like, it was a really, really fresh way to take on the Huntsman tale. And that is what kept me intrigued and what kept me, like, glued to the story.
Yeah, I really like that aspect a lot. And then what it also does is that it eventually takes his voice. He can't actually speak anymore. In this form that she's created, Irina's just made him this thing, this shell, essentially. And at one point, Lorelai realizes that something's very wrong with Cole, so she tries to help him. And she pushes her magic into the space where his human heart should be, and that manages to fight Irina off, and Cole is just Cole. He still can't speak, but, oh, and there's something we should talk about with Lorelai. When Lorelai pushes magic into something, they become bound to her in a sense. They can now hear each other's thoughts. So originally, and we didn't talk about this character either. I don't know if you want to call it a character or not, but I guess she's a character. In the beginning of the story, we realize that Lorelai has this bird, this Griff Raven or something, and it's this massive bird, and it's vicious, but it is loyal to Lorelai, because Lorelai saved it when it was just a baby. So the bird's name is Sasha. And so every now and then we'll get these little, like, clipped sentences that come from Sasha and the things, you know, as she's trying to communicate to Lorelai in her head. And I think it's kind of cool. I kind of like that part with Sasha. Just because the bird was kind of quirky, she's like, "You want mouse? Hungry?" And Lorelai's like, "Ew, no." She's like, "Silly human." And she kind of goes off and gets her and hunts on her own and stuff. Like, I like that little interplay with her and the animals. And again, it's that Snow White vibe where Snow White could speak to the animals, but it gives it a different, like, purpose and a different reason as to why she can do it. It's not all these cute woodland animals. Here's this, like, ridiculously intense hawk who's snapping and, like, got its talons. And it means business. So I thought that was a really interesting way to include that idea from Snow White and make it different.
Yeah, it's not like she has like a chipmunk minion. She has like this like giant vicious bird.
Yeah, she has a bird of prey as her minion, and I would watch out. And so like, and that was one of the funny parts too, is when Trug was like, oh, you know, I'll kill you, blah, 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 blah. And the bird is sitting on her shoulder and she's like, do you know how fast she could tear into your jugular? And the bird is just like, can I? Like, the bird gets so excited about, like, and if people are threatening Lorelai, the bird is vicious. Like, she even attacked the dragons, which, I mean, let's be real. It's not, a bird really can't attack a dragon, but she did because she was loyal. So I liked her little interjections every now and then. I thought they were really fun. And the same thing happens when Lorelai heals a human. And she heals both Gabriel, and who we'll talk about in a minute, or Gabriel, and Cole. And so her and Cole are bound by thoughts. So she can see his thoughts and she can hear him. And it's kind of a good thing because he can't speak otherwise. It's stuck in his dragon form. The dragon takes over too, or in his human form with just a dragon heart, it takes over too much. So they kind of have this mind connection that they share. And Gabriel, who is the man who saved her from her and her brother from the castle, is also, she finally convinces him to let her heal him, and she is then connected to him, but he is aware of how to put up a block in his brain so that they're not constantly connected, only when they really need to be. So those were some interesting things I thought that came out of the story too that were different. Do you guys want to talk about Leo too, who's the last kind of happy party to talk about?
Sure.
Oh, Leo.
Leo.
I don't know why I didn't see his death coming. I feel like I should have. I should have just known it was, you know, inevitable. But I didn't realize that that was going to happen. And so when it did, it kind of took me aback. I was like, okay, all right. Yeah, this kind of sucks. Like, you start out the story, and as I was telling Karen, like, within the first like 50 pages, like, there's at least like 12 deaths all at once. Like, I was like, this, it's not exactly a happy beginning, but hopefully by the end, you know, we'll get to some better times. Yeah, Leo, he seemed like such a fun, silly, like, character. He, you know, he was all about the flair and all about doing things with style, and so I really liked, you know, that part. And to lose him so early in the story was really sad, but I guess in order to truly be the Snow White tale, she kind of has to be on her own and be the last member of her family. So
I was super sad when Leo died. I was so mad. I was like, it's going to have to be either Gabriel or Leo. It has to, like, one of them has to go. Like, it's the only way to really jumpstart her true, like, instead of her carefully laid out plan that was going to take so long, this had to be the way that, like, she had to be enraged and angry enough just to do it and know that she was strong enough to do it, kind of thing. You know what I mean? So I knew one of them had to go, if not both of them, because that's how stories work out sometimes. But I was so sad when it was Leo. I loved his humor and the things that he brought to the, you know, to the table within the story, because he was kind of the lighthearted character and he was really fun. My favorite part was when he was like teaching her how to speak properly when they were talking about, you know, manners at court, because Lorelai is really rough around the edges. She really just doesn't care. But Leo was a little bit more refined. And so he had made some comment about how fetching someone looked. And so when she meets Cole and finds out that he's a king, she curtsies and says that he looks fetching today. And, oh, God, I almost died. It was the best. So, yeah, I was really sad. I liked Leo as a character. I wanted Leo to have, like, his own story. But, sadly, he died. Anyway, so let's see what else. What haven't we covered, you guys? I'm trying to think. So I guess there are elements of the story that we talked about that are similar to a Snow White story. So we have the twist with the huntsman, which is Cole. And eventually, sadly, Irina figures out how to overpower Lorelai. She figures out how to make herself strong enough again. And it's by taking the heart of a Mordekaiser. So she kills Victor. He willingly gives his heart to her so that she can
because
be happy.
He's so nice.
Yeah, it made me sick. I was like, seriously, you're just gonna give her your heart. You're gonna die so that she can be happy after everything she's put you through. Come on, dude. So annoyed.
I did like that he had some honor himself, like knowing everything that she had already put Cole through. He was like, no, you are not taking this poor kid's human heart. Like, no, you've done enough. Like, I did like that he had some honor and like there was a reason for his sacrifice. Like, he was trying to do good as opposed to all things Irina was doing.
Exactly. But still, you should have just staked her through the heart and called it a day. I mean, it would have been easier for everybody. So with Cole being the huntsman, I thought that was a really cool twist and different, yet still incorporating the idea of the huntsman. And eventually, there's the big showdown between Cole and Irina and Lorelai. And by this time, Cole is fully in Irina's control. And so that brings us to the next element of the story that comes up that is a little bit different, and that's true love's kiss. We've all heard about true love's kiss. We know it exists. But in this case, true love's kiss is a little bit different. True love's kiss comes from from Lorelai's magic. So earlier in the story, she and Cole actually kiss, and they're in a water cave because they've escaped one of Irina's like many minions kind of thing. And so they're in a cave under a waterfall, and he's been all scratched up because he was protecting her. And so when she kisses him, bands of light come around them. And when they do, they heal him. And so when it comes time for she's basically dying. He was under Irina's control, and Lorelai knew that she could only do one of two things. She could save herself, or she could save everybody. And so she chose to go after Irina, which meant Cole was going to be able to attack her. And so by saving everyone else, she would eventually die. So Cole kind of goes after her heart and cuts into her skin. So by the time the spell is broken and he realizes what's happened, she's bleeding pretty badly and she's on the verge of death. And so Cole like tries to heal her. He tries to use his fire to like close up her wounds. And in the end, he ends up kissing her, remembering the bright white lights that surrounded them the last time they kissed. So true love's kiss comes to the rescue and saves her, but in a very different way. It's not just the idea that if I kiss you, you'll be saved. Isn't that nice? It has to do with her magic. So I thought that was cool. What did you guys think about that?
Yeah, it was fine. I also forgot that like these are self-contained at this point. So I was like, oh, we're going to get a cliffhanger. And then I was like, no, this has to actually kind of be resolved. So for them to take a different twist on True Love's Kiss was like cool because it stuck to Snow White. There's a kiss. There's all this stuff. But the fact that it wasn't so much like you're the one I'm destined to be with, it was more like there's a lot of magic at play and this is how it works. And yes, love has something to do with it. It wasn't just like an easy way out. There had to be this other element in play, which I appreciated. Not so much just like, oh, quick fix, we can kiss and it's over. Because you already had the fact that they kissed, like you were saying, in play. So you're like, oh, well, something would have clearly happened there, but it had a lot to do with the magic of the world. So that was okay. It was nice.
Yeah. I liked that it had something to do with her magic rather than just being like this, you know, mythical magic fix all. That's like, oh, you know, a single kiss, ta-da, everything is fine. Like I liked that it was, you know, ingrained in the story that this, you know, when they kiss it, clear, you know, they can heal each other basically. And so that, yeah, I liked how that worked into the mythology of the story. Like it felt more satisfying because it wasn't just like, oh, you know, we're in love and our love heals all and ta-da, here we go. It was actually a part of the magic, which was really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I thought it was different. I was glad it wasn't just the damsel in distress. You know what I mean? The boy's gonna kiss her and everything's gonna be great. I thought that was an improvement. And then one of the last elements that kind of exists in the Snow White story is they talk about I'm trying to remember which one it was, where the mother drops blood on the snow or from the roses. Do you guys remember that part of like the tale? Is that the wrong one?
No, it's the whole white as snow, lips as red as blood. It's a part of the
the intro or something. You know what I mean? I vaguely remember it.
Yeah, it's like the reason that Snow White looks the way she does is because her mother or someone in the tale has like helped make her that way or something. Yeah, it all has to do with that.
Yeah, I'm like, I know it's there. I don't remember the whole depth of it. Yeah. So in this tale, they talked about it really early in the beginning when Irina is thinking about what she's done to her sister and that there's blood on the snow. And, you know, it was her sister's blood on the snow. So Irina can't figure out why Lorelai is so powerful. So she does the one thing that she has avoided the entire time she was in Ravenspire. She goes out and basically digs up her sister's bones because she needs an answer as to why Lorelai is so powerful. And so what she finds there is that her sister knew that Irina was the one that killed her. So, or was, you know, in the process of killing her. So she takes her magic and her blood that's in the snow and sends it to Lorelai. So Lorelai doesn't only have her own Mardishka magic, she has her mother's as well. So she's doubly as powerful. And that's why Irina has failed against her every time and is unable to win over the land and everything else. So I thought that was a really cool twist on the blood on the snow and that whole kind of commentary on it. It's what makes, yes, it's still what makes her what she is, but in a very different way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this kind of goes back to what I was saying in my initial reaction to the book, was there are a lot of familiar elements with the slight twist on them. So I think that that's what felt more like a checklist for me. Like, oh, this is here. Oh, but it's done this way. Like, oh, this is here. Oh, but it's done this way. Like, you know, like, I appreciated all of the changes that they made. But then I also felt like, oh, but we have to hit all these checkpoints before we can finish the story.
Yeah, I guess when you're reimagining Snow White, though, you kind of have to. Like, I think it's like a catch-22 sometimes with this sort of thing. But, I mean, overall, I liked it. I thought there was enough in it that was fresh and different that I enjoyed, as opposed to, you know what I mean? Some of them you read and you're like, wow, yep, nope, you definitely went for it. It's kind of either so far different that you can't really call it a reimagining anymore, or so similar that you can't really, you know what I mean, distinguish. So
yeah, I feel like and this is definitely like a personal like thing, is that I'm so covered in adaptations that I think I just it might have just been one too many. Like, I think I would have appreciated it if I wasn't so in like entrenched in Once Upon a Time, because I'm covering it, and then also like just a lot of things I've been reading are adaptation. So I think if I hadn't read, or if I read this like maybe over the summer, I might have liked it more and not so deep into what I'm working on right now. But like I said, it is interesting. It is good. I like a good adaptation every now and then, but I think I'm just oversaturated in them at the moment.
Yeah, I've reached my limit today. So, all right, Kristen, do you have any final thoughts on this story?
I mean, I'm glad I read it. It's been a while for me. Besides Once Upon a Time, I haven't read a whole lot of like fairy tale adaptations. So this was really good fun for me. It took a little while to get into it. So if if you're having trouble getting into the story, plug away at it. Once Cole and Irina meet, I think everything sort of picks up, and from there it was less of like a trudging through and more of a, okay, I want to find out how this ends kind of thing. So it took me a minute to get into, but once I got into it, I was intrigued and wanted to find out more. And I definitely want, like, I know she's planning on possibly telling more, you know, stories from this world. And I'm really, really hoping that we haven't seen the last of the Draconi, because I loved them. And there's so much more going on in Elder with his sister and with all the other dragons, that I'm really hoping that we get more from them, because I really, really liked them. So,
Yeah, I really liked the Draconi. They were definitely a huge highlight for me in the story. I enjoyed it. All right, so that pretty much sums up our review of The Shadow Queen by C.J. Redwine. It's kind of a middle-of-the-road book, I guess, is a fair commentary on it for everybody. So if you guys have read it, let us know what you think at Book Hype so that we get your opinions too. And then, let's see, next week will be a news episode. Lots of exciting things happening in the world of books. And then we'll have a book review for The Paper Princess. And then our special guest, Brittany Cavallaro, author of A Study in Charlotte. And if you guys haven't read that, you need to get that
you
book.
Do. Especially, it's really good.
And if you have any like inkling of liking for Sherlock Holmes, you need to pick up this book because it is just so good. So good. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, guys.